there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me today, Linda Vanella, back with us as usual, helping us out to put this together, and Julian Joiello and Ben Starr, and a special guest, my good friend Michael Jessen, one of the most beautiful men on the planet. Happens to be by visiting us. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Armand. Happy to be here.
Nice, huh? Nice to have you around the spot. I need you today for a reason because of what we're talking about. And I'm going to ask you to help us with it because from your perspective, you run a business. And in the business that you run, you have a lot of people you manage, right?
Yes.
And how much communication do you have with them face-to-face as opposed to by text or phone?
Well, this day and age, especially with being in a global business with people all over the world at any given time, face-to-face is much more rare. It's more and more scarce. So quite a bit of communication can be telephone, Skype, email, even Facebook, all kinds of outlets, Twitter.
So that's what you're using. You're using that as a primary means of communication rather than the face-to-face discussion.
Yes.
And you are all over the world. You're in China, you're in Africa, you're everywhere dealing with all these different people, and you have but you do it all by phone or instrument or computer or
text,
whatever.
Messaging, emailing, like I mentioned, even Facebook in this day and age. You never know if that's the best way to get in touch with your team.
Okay, so now that's what we're going to take it. We're going to take it from there. The we started talking yesterday, if you wanted to hear, about the nature of thought. What is thinking? And we wanted to know what thinking is and why do people think, period. And part of what we came to was people become anxious. And they become anxious because there's some primitive part of their brain, the amygdala, which interprets stimulation as danger. And it says, hey, I'm being nervous, there must be danger, and it looks for danger. Now, what the brain will do when it looks for danger, it will say, where's the danger? And it'll start thinking about danger. And the more of a thinking type you are, the more you get this sense of where you find dangers. Now, finding danger over and over again is what certain people do, especially if in the Enneagram there are six. What's interesting about it is the room is filled with sixes. So we are filled in this room with people who think a lot. Now, if you tend to think a lot, thinking is the way your brain goes to solve the problem. Where's the danger? Where's the danger? Where's the danger? One of the forms of thinking that people do is figuring things out, trying to identify things. Paranoia, for example, is a form of thinking. Paranoia says to you, where's the danger? Oh, he must be after me. They must be giving me a problem. So thinking is not as much a creative endeavor trying to find a solution as it is an avoidance of nervousness. And we're going to start off with nervousness. Jumpy people tend to think more than other people. Does that make sense? Jumpy people, when I say jumpy, meaning they tremble on the inside, their mind tends to go in every direction possible. Now, what happens when your mind gets jumpy? You look for something to worry about. You look for, try to identify the source. And nowadays, there's this new thing that's happened over the last 10 years, which has created a source that becomes constant for almost everyone. And we're talking about the media. We're talking about cell phones. We're talking about computers. Interactions, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's with the advent of smartphones, Armand, we've come to a point where the majority of the population is carrying this device in their pocket that gives them access to everyone they know 24 hours a day and to all kinds of information. And so I think a lot of it has become really a compulsion to always access this information, whether that's communication or information about the world, news.
Maybe it's not so much information. Let's say it's always about that we've learned Since your mind is always perceiving danger, we've now learned that you could spot the danger easier by having a device. So like if you were a monkey and you didn't know how to get a fruit out of a tree, you'd discover a stick. And you take your stick and now you hit the tree. Now you're going to carry that stick with you because you're going to be able to get the fruit out of the tree. The cell phones have become a stick. They become an extension so that you could find danger. How do we define danger? You say, oh, no, we're looking for good things. We're looking for to identify. No, no. It's all about danger. So let's look at the typical thing. Linda, you had an experience with someone the other day around a phone.
Yes, Armand. I see it oftentimes with patients, people who come in, that they have to hold the phone in their hand. It's almost like a discomfort if I ask them to please put it down. If we're doing some yoga or we're doing some physical activity, they'll actually have difficulty separating themselves physically from their cell phone.
Today we're going to be talking about the impact of the cell phone on anxiety as a distraction from people. How many of you have ever felt insulted by the fact that somebody has their phone on the table while you're talking to them? Do you ever get that?
I've definitely felt that. A lot of the time when it's like a one-on-one dinner or something like that with a close friend or someone I'm dating, if they've got their phone out, it's a straight disrespect to me sometimes. I take it that way.
Well, here's a question for you. Do you do it? Do you do it if you're out with your girlfriend? Do you take your phone out and put it on the table? And
I often see if the other person is doing it, then I feel like it's okay to do it on my end.
So it means we're going to limit our contact. That's what it says. It says we're going to have a group here. We're not going to be one-to-one. We're going to have a group. So the question is having your cell phone a way of getting angry and demonstrating anger at somebody? By putting a distance between you and them.
Absolutely. It's very passive-aggressive. I mean, what you're saying is in a one-on-one situation, it's you, me, and then my phone, which is everyone else in my life.
Everybody else in the world.
And I'm looking at that, even though you're sitting across from me.
Right, like it's like this thing is could be more important than the conversation I'm having with you right now.
Oh, it's my cousin. I got to take this call. You know? Well, I don't know. I'm not like that. I like to turn off my phone. But I guess other people who are more nervous. So people who respond to their phones immediately, I make as a theory, I believe, are people who are more nervous and more, and I'm going to use the word pathological. It's a sign of a problem. If you got that phone in your hand and you can't let it go, if you can't leave it in another room, if you use it as your way of communicating silent things to people. I've seen people. I know of a man who was having an affair, and while he's having the affair, he's talking to his wife at the dinner table, and he's texting his girlfriend. Is that not a way of saying I'm angry? You know, here, right in your face.
Yeah, sure.
Right in your face. Linda, you were going to say.
Yes, and I was in the nail salon just yesterday, and I couldn't help but to reflect on how I was holding my own cell phone to the point of having it interfere with an opportunity that I could relax and give myself some off time. So I do see it as really impacting upon all of us and our rules of courtesy and presence significantly.
Do you put yours away?
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't.
Why would you not?
Because sometimes I'm waiting a phone call or waiting a message and always feeling that, it has to be immediate when in reality it doesn't.
Of course. So in other words, you're never really waiting for a phone call. Because in the past, you would have waited for the mail to come. This illusion of I'm waiting for a phone call, no. That's an illusion. You mean you're nervous. You mean you're nervous. That's what it means. It means that you're feeling anxiety and that it doesn't matter what it is. Your symptom of jumping on the phone is a symptom of being disturbed at the moment.
And there's this unspoken rule that's come about with the proliferation of cell phones, which is that everybody has a cell phone. So if you're not contactable, then there's something wrong because we know you have a cell phone. So if you don't respond within the day from a text, is your phone dead? Are you missing? Is something going on? If you don't respond,
are you accountable for that? You mean
right.
You're accountable you've for not
become,
responding?
You've become accountable now that everyone has a cell phone.
Wow. Hey, Michael, I got to ask you a question. Mike, you are one of the most responsible beings I know on the planet. You have thousands of people who are looking for you at different times. If you don't respond, what happens? I mean, do people get worried?
Yes. To keep it simple, yes. And what I've noticed over the years, especially as you know, the idea of the smartphone and the how connected we all are, one development that's troubling. I always like sort of the 24-hour rule when it comes to, let's say, an email or even a text or a voicemail, which is if I don't respond to you, give me the latitude that there's probably a good reason. Don't ping me within a 24-hour period, badgering me for why haven't you responded. I think some common courtesy has dropped off in our culture also as, you know, this concept of connectivity has increased. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier with the idea of we're sitting down at dinner with friends or colleagues or business associates, and everybody's putting the cell phone on the table, and this happens to me all the time. I'm fine with it. I'm used to the in my business and my work, it happens all the time, and it's fairly common. But I'm sort of reminded, it seems as if it's like cowboys or gangsters in the old days putting their guns on the table in the Wild West or, you know, in a speakeasy or something.
Right. Yeah,
and it's the same kind of security blanket that you mentioned. It always happens at almost the same time at the onset. I always think this must have been what it was like at the Sundown Saloon.
Because you've got your rod, and it may ring at any moment. I knew a psychiatrist who once came in here. He was a physician. He came in here and he worked with me for a little bit. And he had a beeper. This was before cell phones. He had a beeper. And he had a beeper where he would get emergency messages. So he got emergency messages from the hospital, from other people he was treating. And he would look down. And I remember he looked down at his beeper. And he looked up at me and he said, "That's 106. I said, "106 what?" He said, "That's 106 I have not responded to." And he smiled. And I fired him. I said, "I don't want to work with you. I don't even want to be around you if they could get joy out of ignoring it." But however, the phone does give you that power. It gives you the power to diss people, ignore people, shut people out. You were saying, Ben, a passive-aggressive tool. It's like a blessing because you're not picking up the phone, like Michael says, and throwing it at somebody. You're not taking it. Like, they don't make the phone with sharp edges.
Right. They don't put a knife on
your phone. Put a knife on the edge of your phone in case it doesn't work. You can fling it at somebody. No.
Aman, there's also, I think, a different expectation. You know, we're speaking about when we talk about courtesy and manners at the table or when you're with someone else, or as Michael is saying, business-wise, we all put our guns at the table and the table at the same time, which I thought was quite cute. But I also think, like, for instance, I noticed with my son, one of my sons, on his phone, when I text him, I get an immediate response, "I'm driving, unable to answer, I'll reply later." And that was an interesting...
But that's automatic. He doesn't write that.
Yes, but I also think that because of this feeling of an immediate reaction, you have to respond to a text immediately, there's almost this feeling like we're expected to answer it immediately. And so this kind of time lapse, I know people who say, "Yeah, I thought you died if you didn't respond to me within an hour. You know, something must have happened." So I think it's also all of us trying to understand what exactly is this tool and how can we incorporate it into our life so that we could deal with it more effectively.
Well, you know, let's talk about distrust now. If my anxiety leads me to feel like I'm in danger, and then I look for safety by having connection with somebody else, let's say it's you, and I don't get that connection, then I feel more in danger. Therefore, are you the one who's not responding to me, making me feel more in danger, or is my anxiety growing because I'm frustrated in my attempt to find safety? And that's what I think it's all about. I think all of that is about jealousy and fear, and all of that is about trying to find safety. And if we had the ability to, if I were a therapist to somebody, I would say to them, look at the anxiety, let's look at the nervousness, let's look at what you felt before that happened. Not what the person said on the cell phone and how they responded to you and what took place, because you got to see what you're bringing to it. They discovered pyroxidine, vitamin B6, on the activity of aromatic amino acid decarbonase enzyme, and they studied it by positive emission typography. And they found, I have nothing more to say. I just wanted to see you stare at me like that, waiting for an answer to come out. This is like the effects of acetoxy cyclohexamide on Charles River breeding rats in mice. They found that if you have a low vitamin B6, that you tend to be more nervous. That's it. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, when we talk about this, actually, it reminds me a lot of, I bring this up pretty often with you, is Hurricane Sandy. We had the power outage in New York, and there was a week where I couldn't use my phone and contact anybody. I didn't have no internet, no electricity. I was in the downtown area near St. Mark's, and the anxiety that I often have, I have a lot of energy, nervous energy, really left my body. It was like a... I mean, it was freeing. It was a very freeing experience, and I was. It's weird to say that I'm without power and without hot water, and to say it was a very relaxing time for myself.
Wow, it's very interesting. So look at what you just said, Julian, just out of the mouths of brilliant people. Without power, without the struggle for power, you felt at peace. Like anxiety is the struggle for power. Suddenly the power is taken away and you're at peace. A beautiful experience.
That's one of the reasons that I try at least once a year to get out of the city and get up into the woods upstate and go camping, because it's an opportunity to turn off my phone for a few days. And in addition to really getting to connect with nature, there's also the ability to disconnect from this grid that we're sort of plugged into and this culture of immediacy that Michael alluded to and Julian and Linda also mentioned.
Well, but again, the immediacy is growing, and we're in a culture where this is growing. Now, we're not making cell phones bad. We're making the awareness that you lose when you can't be aware of the anxiety that you bring to it. Because I can't tell you how many times men have talked to me about the women they love getting shaken by something they read on a phone. You know how crazy it feels to an average guy to look at somebody getting that shaken? Men don't get as shaken by what they see on phones. Think about this for a second, from a felt sense. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine you look at a phone and somebody says, oh, your cousin died? It's not going to have the impact.
Well, I would hope that someone would have the courtesy to call me about that, at least.
Interesting thing, right?
Yeah.
Not post it.
I wouldn't want to see that in a text message or an email.
What would you think if it came across in a text message, Linda?
I think it depends upon, I guess the intimacy and the degree of the person. It could be something that if it was a distant relative or a distant friend, it might be something that could be transferred easily to me by a text. But of course, if it was someone closer, I would presume that it would be certainly warrant of either a person-to-person or a phone conversation.
But if it were communicated to you via a group of mailing, right? Joe died, right? And you got that group mailing, how could you have a deep emotional reaction knowing that that was that distance?
Well, it depends, I guess.
Because if you're nervous going in. You see, if you're anxious, looking into the information, when you're anxious before the event happens, that's what makes you respond. A good friend of mine said to me the other day, she said, I feel like I'm on, what was the fuel?
High test.
I feel like I'm on high test, she said. And I run on regular gas, but I feel like I'm running on high test. When you're running on high test, that phone owns you. That piece of material owns you. Computers used to own you. Remember email used to own you? No longer. They're all gone. It's all done. It's now the new device.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually more mobile devices as of last year than there are people in the world.
More mobile devices than there are people.
And Google estimates that we take our phones out of our pockets over 100 times per day.
Wow. 100 times a day. It's kind of an amazing thing. See, we can't make money out of just the slipping and sliding. Well, let's talk about the social network. What happens in the social network when you have a chance to have a communication with somebody? Someone came to me and wanted to do Skype therapy with me. And I said, I tried Skype, and I said, nah, it doesn't work. Something was wrong with it.
Are you talking about voice chat or video chat?
This was Skype video chat.
Okay.
It didn't work. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the person, and I was listening to them, but it just didn't work. Whereas when we did it on phone, it worked beautifully. Do you find that experience, Linda?
Yes, exactly. I have done many phone conversations and been very successful. But yet, when I put it on FaceTime or Skype, there's a feeling of distance. It's almost like you're trying to work something through, but there's like an interference. And as I feel when you said, it's like an image, or it's a kind of distorted feeling of affect that it feels kind of awkward.
But if you would, let's say your grandchildren, and I know you have a lot of grandchildren, if one of your grandkids wanted to talk to you and they use FaceTime, isn't that better than just phone?
Sometimes it is when it's there's some animation for a short period of time. But I think when you're speaking about therapy or you're speaking about a more intimate process of a dialogue, it becomes something different.
Well, intimate. What about two lovers? Would two lovers be better off doing FaceTime or phone time? What do you think?
I mean, I found myself appreciating not having to do a video chat. I lived long distance from my ex-girlfriend for 4 months, and we would constantly video chat every day, and she wanted to do this, and it became a task. It became 3 hours of, oh my God, I have to look good and focus on this image of this person on a screen that is flat. And when I went on the phone one day and I couldn't video chat, it wasn't working, and we called each other and we did only a voice chat, I could lie down on my bed, put the phone to my ear, and have a much more intimate experience where her image lived in my mind less than it was like in the video chat, which was kind of telling me, I'm talking to a computer, and
well, you
this
see,
was
that's
talking
the
to
problem.
A person.
The problem is what's on a screen is an image. It's not the person. They're not there, you see? And it was like, it's you think that they're present, that they're physically present, but they're not. This is an image of a person. So you're really not talking to the person. When they used to have delay, remember when there was delay on computers? When you talk on a computer and you'd say something and there'd be a delay by a few seconds because it took time to get there, you would get that effect. You know, I'm not really talking to them because I'm talking to them.
You'd say hello.
3 seconds ago.
Oh, hey there.
Yes, it would be 3 seconds ago.
How's
it would be
going?
Totally different.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you would think that would get cured by real time. It's not. It's the same thing about the image. Now, let me take that a step further. You guys know a lot. You people know a lot about social chatting, about dating online. What's the story? I mean, are people really... I mean, what happens when you go on Match.com and you say, I'm going to meet somebody?
Well, what I've heard from a lot of people that go on dates through OkCupid or Match.com, it's this sort of thing where you have these expectations that build up over the time you've messaged each other and looked at each other's profiles and investigated all their photos and their likes and all this stuff, and you build up this person in your mind what this person's going to look like. And 9 times out of 10, they meet them in person and are like, oh my God, this is nothing like what I expected. I mean, this is a different human being. They're shorter. Their voice sounds different. They've been lying about what they liked. They feel totally deceived a lot of the time.
So why would you even bother with that material? Because you think eventually you're going to sort through it and find somebody real?
Well, it's easier to narrow down what you're looking for. You know, you have certain parameters of what you want in a mate. And on the other hand, rejection is a lot easier when you don't have to experience it face to face. You know, if you get rejected by someone on the other side of a machine, that's a bit easier to stomach than...
And also, starting. Also, not only the rejection, but the initiating,
the opener.
Too. Because I know a lot of any women that are even remotely attractive, I know that have an account, will get hundreds of messages a day from men. I mean, hundreds. And it's like... They don't even have to think. They can just say, oh, well, I like this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. It's not like they have to go up to this person and say, oh, can I ask you on a date nervously? It's like I have all this power in writing this message that I get to think about for as long as I want, eloquently write, relate it to all of your interests that I've seen on your profile, see what your full name is, where you come from, and relate to all of that, and then write this first message, and you have all that power and all that freedom.
So what you're doing is you're fishing. You are looking to find, get that other person seduced into wanting you.
You're cutting out the first couple steps.
Right. You're just gonna, you're gonna make sure, I'm gonna fish and get you. I'm gonna bait this hook, and I am gonna be so good at baiting, I will become the master baiter. No, I will bait this hook so much that I will eventually get you to bite. And when you do, then I could either pull away and I make my choices. How is this a manifestation of an underlying anxiety disorder, is my question, because I'm a shrink. This shows to me the same kind of thing. People who would get involved in these kind of conflicts by presenting a false self, and then presenting a false self and hoping it becomes acceptable, so that they could eventually get your response and slowly unveil their real self, is the same fantasy that children have with their parents. Children with their parents have the same problem. When you're a kid, you learn that certain emotions are not acceptable to your parents. So what you do is you change yourself and you become fake. And you try to become the person that pleases your parents. Everybody who does this on Match.com, who does this, is just reliving this early childhood struggle.
Right, they want to be
which they call the narcissistic struggle.
The most suave person. They want to
be loved by my mother. I want to be loved by my mother, I want to be loved by my father, and I want them to accept me. And in fact, I am sure that if you selected the people that people select on Match.com, it would be a parent. That would say somebody who, I would say it would be a parent. It would be somebody who would have the qualities of your parent is what you're looking for. I'm looking for a man who's going to protect me. I'm looking for a man who's going to take care of me. And what does he do? The person on the other line who wants to seduce you is going to say, I'm that daddy. I'm that daddy. Here comes daddy. Here comes daddy. Here comes mommy. Here comes daddy. And then when you get to the bottom of it, you say, oops, that wasn't my mommy or daddy. Let me continue. All based on the fact that you don't feel safe, that you feel like a nervous, lost kid. And so you're searching desperately. Desperately to try to find someone who will care for you, and maybe some way that you could eventually feel safe. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We will be taking your calls today. We're here with Michael Jessen, who may have to leave us shortly because he's such a busy guy, and Ben Starr, Julian Joiello, and the inimitable, indefatigable Linda. And also just to let you know, we'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. And if there is anybody who has not received any fulfillment of any of the items that we have ever offered on the internet, not on the internet, on the, during the fund drive, we have had flash drives, we have had appointments, a number of things that we've offered. If you, for any reason, have not gotten 100% fulfillment, please call my office at 212-757-4488, because according to our records, we have given everything that we should be giving. When we get back from our break, the telephone number will be 212-957-2729, and we will continue with this interesting, interesting discussion about anxiety, neurosis, and being a ding slave. A ding slave. You know, every time you hear the ding, you feel like a slave. We'll be back with you shortly, my friends.
Just look at it, look at that fabulous face of yours. I knew first look I took at it, this was the face that the world adores. Look at those eyes, as wise and as deep as the sea. Look at that nose, it shows what a nose should be. As for your smile, it's lyrical, friendly, and warm as a summer's day. That face is just a miracle. Where could I ever find words to say? that fabulous face of yours. I knew first look that I took of it, this was the face that the world adores. Look at those eyes, as wise and as deep as the sea. Look at that nose, it shows what a nose should be. As for your smile, it's lyrical, friendly, and warm as a summer's day. That face is just a miracle. Where could I ever find words to say the way that it makes me happy?
Just because we think that's a pretty song. And because we're talking about cell phones and people being disconnected, there's something awful beautiful about looking at a face that you love. Just open that door. What? Somebody's at our door. Hold on a second. Somebody's at our door. What could that possibly be? Hold on a second.
Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Julian. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, God.
It's Julian's birthday, everybody should know. And in the studio, the entire team and all the people at the center walked in bringing a cake for Julian. And he's here crying.
Thank you very much. Now what do I get to do with this carrot cake? Well,
looks delicious.
It looks wonderful, right? Happy birthday, Julian.
Thank you.
Julian's 22 years old today, guys. And that was planned. We had that so well planned.
Yeah, Jesus, I had no clue that was going to happen, actually.
That's great. Hey, we're going to take your calls in just a moment. Right. I realized I didn't. It's still right. Right, okay. We had the plan. We had the plan with 99%. You meant turn up iTunes volume. All right. Now, let me ask you one more question, or two more questions that came out of our conversation about anxiety and social media.
Yeah, what do you make of these people that we've seen on the news that have camped outside the Apple store for days waiting for the phone to come out?
All right. Now, let's look at somebody who's got an internal world that is fortified by their possession of information. They want to own the object. They want it so desperately. So they're nervous people. The more nervous you are, the more you will sacrifice your body and soul to get this object. So it's a reflection of the anxiety that we were talking about. This very person who will camp outside is a person who lives feeling like they're in a cave. And you'll see when they come out, when they talk to you, they're not going to be the one who's having a fun. They're not the seven in the Enneagram. They're not the party. This is the person who lives privately, who has decided that they're going to do this thing and get this power so that they could feel safe.
Because that's a big commitment to take days out of your life.
But it's not if your life is empty days. See, if your life is filled with empty days and you could fill them with a quest, right? That's a direction. What was your question, Julian?
Well, I've been thinking about cell phones and how much they've become part of our lives. So what do you think of a cell phone almost as like a sixth sense?
If you spell the word S-I-C-K as opposed to S-I-X, a sixth sense, yes.
Okay.
Because I think the phone is a manifestation. I'm not saying it's bad. I love the social media. I love where we're going. I love computers. I love information. I love all of this. But you got to see that the humans are being left behind. The heart is being left behind. And maybe it's time. Maybe it's time that we don't need hearts anymore. Maybe we don't need souls anymore. Maybe we don't need contact anymore. Maybe we don't need face-to-face. Maybe we don't need to feel the breath of the other person. maybe we're done with all that, you know, and we're at the tail end of it. Of course you shake it off, but maybe we're at the tail end of love and moving on to something else. It's possible. I'm going to hang out a little longer, but I'm going to stay as conscious as possible not to get caught up in that loop. Because the love thing kind of, you know, I'm an old timer. I like that stuff. But for many people, maybe they're done with it. Maybe love is too much pain. Maybe love has too much grief, too much vulnerability. And maybe they're just tired of it. So what would they rather do? They'd rather have a cell phone on their lap. And they, instead of love, will have these exchanges. Talk to me about one part of this before we go further and take our calls, Julian. Talk to me about Instagram. And for many of the people who don't know about it, let's see what it is.
All right, well, Instagram is photo sharing, so you can kind of, it's in one of the many apps on iPhone or any smartphone. You can scroll through and see photos, well-edited photos by people that they post publicly. And it's one of the, I mean, probably the most popular application to have on your phone.
I don't think I understood what you just said. Can we get a better definition of that? You scroll. How could I scroll through?
Why would I
be looking for it in the first place?
It's a place that people post photos of themselves or photos they take in
public. So you take a picture of yourself.
Yes.
And then you put it on a public post.
It's like a public place, like as if you were posting it on a bulletin board for the world.
Like a Facebook thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, how is it different than Facebook?
Because it's strictly photos. So essentially, if everyone in this room was on Instagram and you were at an event and you took a picture, you could share it, and wherever we could see that you were at this event.
So if Linda took a picture of all of us right now
and put it on Instagram,
Yeah. Everybody in the audience can go to Instagram and get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that.
Okay.
Who's going to do it? Somebody take a picture.
Positive Mind Instagram.
Go ahead. Here comes a Positive Mind Instagram. Sure. So now that people can get a picture of everything that's going on in this room, right? Let me see. How many pictures can you get? All right. You got me. Can't get enough of us, right? So get two photos. That's one. Okay. Here comes another. And there's Linda in the middle there. And with Julian. We got Julian.
I'll get one with my cake.
Yeah, don't miss the birthday cake.
All right, now you're going to post those to Instagram.
All right, sounds good.
And how are you going to post them? How are people going to find them?
Positive Mind Instagram. I guess I'll have to make an account for that.
Oh, that'll
I'll do
take
it.
Too long. You can't do it on yours?
We could post it on my account.
Yeah, put it on yours.
Put it on yours. Why not? Come on, Julian, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday,
Julian. It's your birthday, Julian. Put it on yours. It's the right thing. You can follow Julian around. He's putting it on his, and he's going to give you his event, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's see. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Take your calls in a minute. Instagram, Facebook. What's with Facebook now? I've heard some people say, a lot of people say, young people say, I don't use Facebook. That's for old people. Okay? Has that become the case?
I think so. I quit Facebook myself after using it for nearly 10 years. I quit it earlier this year, and I actually started receiving text messages from people asking me if I unfriended them. People couldn't believe that they weren't able to find me. So I think there's
Why did you un-Facebook?
I just felt like it was getting to be a bit much. I didn't need all these details. The people who I'm in touch with and are part of my life, I have their number. They have my number. They can contact me via phone or email. So to me, it was just an extra layer of communication to worry about.
I maintain a Facebook presence for the Positive Mind because of the radio program, because the people like to be in touch with each other. But I tell the therapists, get yourself off Facebook, because they are being hounded, especially when they put their photos on there.
Right.
It's like crazy. What's the danger of putting your photo on a Facebook page?
You're taking it. I mean, it's similar to Instagram. You're taking moments of yours that may be family moments or friend moments or intimate relationship
private.
Moments,
yeah.
Something that should be a private, something.
And what about being stalked?
That too.
What about as a woman putting her face on a Facebook? Is that a danger? Is that?
I think it depends, you know, on person to person situation, but it goes a little far as maintaining privacy. I think there are some things that we can keep to ourselves, And I don't think that my entire photo album, family history, personal history, needs to be accessible to everyone I know.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
So if you did, then there would be a part of going back to our theory, if you're nervous, and as a nervous person, you feel danger. And you feel that the danger is that you're not connected to anybody. So you put yourself out there so people will be connected to you. Even if they stalk you, even if they hunt you, even if all they care about is having sex with you, it doesn't matter. As long as you are desired. Then putting yourself and your details on Facebook is one way of serving that neurotic need.
Sure. And the thing about Facebook is that people will like things that you share.
What does that mean?
What it means is that if you posted something, let's say we were friends on Facebook and you posted something about, the climate change march that just happened, I could click the word like and then it would say, Ben likes this, with a thumbs up.
So there's a way to literally measure approval from the people in your life.
Right, and it becomes a contest for who can get the most likes. Well, I posted a picture of my dog and 80 people liked it.
It's like, wow, I'm doing pretty well right now.
I must be doing something right.
I must be lovable.
But then there's the guy who posts a photo of himself and he gets 5 likes. And he feels like he's not enjoyed. He's not getting the approval that he wants. He's not getting that that verification.
I hear we're talking about different rules and expectations of one another. But what you just said about love and perhaps vulnerability and maybe we've had enough. I think that there's almost a reorganization of our feelings of intimacy. What we're talking about and who's approving of me and who's not approving of me and friendships. And so connections of a different kind that I think, whether we're calling it vulnerability and love or connection, but it's certainly worth looking at.
Well, what kind, though?
Yeah.
We're looking for less. I think we're looking for a more shielded connection. And I think the story that we're saying here is the world is moving fast. And as we went from computer to computer, we went to a roboticized world. And the robots are appearing. And we were all worried about the robots, but guess what? We are them. You know, we've looked for the robots, and here we became them. And slowly it's going to happen. I guarantee it will happen to me eventually. I guarantee it'll happen to all of you eventually, and your children and your grandchildren. Now, you may try to keep your grandchildren with loving, open hearts by showing them nice, smiley faces, but those kids are going to be owning cell phones, and they're not going to be that way. So, my friends, I say goodbye to love. I say bid it adieu, but give it a slow exit. Hold on as long as you can. Because this is maybe our best opportunity to enjoy it.
I mean, and you think about what wearable technology is, and that's adding robotics to your body. I mean,
what
physically.
Wearable technology?
For example, there's something called Google Glass, which is in a beta phase right now, but it's going to be sold within the next year or so, where it's glasses that have built-in screens on the side, a camera, sound for headphones, where you can wear these all the time, 24/7, like you would your glasses, and walk around the world and get directions from your robot. You get text messages, you get all this stuff, and you don't even have the choice to take it out of your pocket. It's on your face. It's in your eye. It's almost to the point like you're getting an upgrade to your eyeballs. You know what I mean? It's like this addition of robotics to your body. And it's like moving towards this.
Could you tell me about Tinder as well?
Yes, Tinder is an application that's extremely popular right now among people my age, 22 as of today. And Tinder is basically online dating at a super speed where you just have a couple photos that represent you and you can swipe yes or no. And if you both swipe yes on each other, then you can talk to each other by text and eventually meet up. And it's turned into online speed dating, which kind of skips the intimacy and just sort of goes to the, you know, that part.
Yeah. And Julian, while I've got you, Twitter does what?
Twitter is like, you get to speak to the public in a short sentence or two and tell anybody any kind of thoughts you're having in your head. And so people use Twitter. Well, they'll post something every 10 minutes where they say, oh, I ate this food today, or it's so weird that the sky is blue, or something like that.
Or I'm listening to the Positive Mind.
Right, I'm listening to the Positive Mind. And they just update you on personal thoughts, basically, in public.
So let's think about that. Let's think about the effect of that. Every feeling you have, every thought you have, everything you're doing can now become something where you're connected to other people. So now let's look at this, not just from the negative point of view. If God is the unification of every possible cellular self, then in effect, by using Twitter, you become God. By stretching yourself out there, you bring yourself out to the ends of the universe. It can't be all bad. Maybe the human entrapment of love is what's been keeping us away from the big connection. Maybe.
I mean, maybe. There are people on Twitter that have 5 million followers. So 5 million people.
What?
5 million followers means, like, let's say you have, like, celebrities or people. I have friends that are actors from the show I used to work on.
Do you have
on.
A Twitter account?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, how many people you got followers?
Hovers around 1,000.
Uh-huh.
Right. And this is people that have chosen to follow your account. It's people that have chosen that I want to see your updates whenever they happen, right when they happen, on my phone all the time.
Whatever Julian is doing
whatever
today.
Julian says, I'm going to see it, and I can like it, and I can send it to my friends, I can see it. And so there are people that have, 5 million, 10 million people following them. So when they say something on Twitter, it becomes immediate viral. It becomes viral immediately. Millions of people know it. A third of those 10 million people share it to all of their friends, and it becomes an immediate spread of this of their word across the world. I mean, it is almost exactly what you're talking about.
Now, I know I'm saying a lot of things that people know about already, but there's a whole group of people out there who wanted to become familiar with this but didn't know how to ask. Let's go to LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is something that I've been... LinkedIn is something that people have hounded me about for years. And what is LinkedIn about?
Well, LinkedIn is essentially Facebook for professionals, for people who want to have a, sort of a virtual resume. It shows everything you've done, everyone you're connected to in a professional way.
Well, what I've found is I've found myself linked into people I don't like. How did that happen?
Well, you know, we don't like everyone we deal with on a professional level, necessarily.
So, in other words, people could say that they're connected to me, and they become part of a LinkedIn group, or I have to approve of them.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I've gotten LinkedIn invitations, and I've heard people say that they have a LinkedIn profile that they didn't even know about, because someone listed them as someone they knew.
Well, what's interesting is you also don't have necessarily the power always over what shows up about you on the internet. So you could Google somebody. Like, I remember I went on Craigslist once and I was buying a bed, and the woman said, oh, your voice is beautiful. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And she said, oh, I looked you up on Google before we met, and I saw your cover of this song that you did, and it was really good. And I was like, what? Like, you've heard me sing before, and I've never met you in my life. And it's because she likes to see who she's meeting on Craigslist. And there's, you know, you can find anything about people, not necessarily things you put on there.
So if you have this, my friend, if you're one of the, you know, and I know we said we were going to get to our phone calls, but there is just so much coming across in email, and we have a lot to respond to. Plus, we've got these exciting, beautiful people here who are the real humans. They're not robots yet. I'm looking at three people, one who just left, Michael Jessen, right? And he's this Linda Vanella. You still human, Linda?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am, Armand, and proud
you
today.
Don't, are you yes. Sure you don't want your heart to die?
No,
just think about how less nervous you could be. Just think about the fact that you never worry about anything anymore, and you just become automatic. Not a bad way to be, don't you think? You could become spiritual that way, too. You could become Buddhistic. You can become one with everything, you know, like a Frankfurter. I'll have one with everything. You can be, you can become completely united. No, hey, you still want to be a person of the heart? I don't know about that. What about you, Ben? Come on, Ben. Here's an opportunity.
I'm human. Hanging in there.
Are you sure you want to be human? Because think of this opportunity. No more pain.
I'm too attached to my humanity.
No more pain, no more trouble, no more worries, no more grief. Just everything is line up the ducks and make it work.
It's tempting, but it doesn't sound exciting. Mm-mm. I'd rather...
Exciting.
Yeah, it's less exciting.
Interesting word. Mm. It means you got to take away the energy.
There's no risk.
So the thing that we said a little earlier is that the basis of all of this is this abundance of anxiety, and the abundance of anxiety leads us astray to go into these compulsive behaviors that may not be so good. But what Ben is saying, yes, but don't get rid of it all, because I want to keep some of it, because I need a basis of energy to stay alive and feel alive.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to stay human.
Well, you're 22. You can afford to give it up now. You've had 22 years of being human.
I would like 60 more, please.
60 more?
At least.
And then you'll become a robot.
And
right?
Then, yeah, when I'm like 82, I'll say, okay, I'm ready to be a robot. I want to try it out. It's probably going to be pretty cool by then, actually.
The singularity will happen by then. We'll upload our brains into the internet.
Listen, my friends, thank you very much for all of this fun we're having on the internet. Special thanks to Mario Murillo, by the way, who has just taken over as program director at WBAI. It's great to hear that he's back at the helm. He's a beautiful man. And we're going to be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of this fascinating, interesting stuff. But on the way out, we have a special song to play that Ben is going to play for us. No, the Mexican one. I said the other one, you know. Here we go. I thought I wrote that on paper. Here we go. One, two, three. That's much better. Much better. Shall we give it a last song,
yes,
my friend?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.